Daring to dream of a better world for all of us. CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg.
The following is an encore presentation from CKUW's archives. Join us next week when the regular host will be back with a few new episodes of original programming.
Welcome to Square Wave on CKUW 95.9 FM. I'm your host, Dustin Rogers, and today on the program, Sega's Model 2 arcade board. The birthplace of many enduring and not-so-enduring arcade franchises of the 90s. Over the next hour, we'll explore the biggest games on the platform and the many teams at Sega that were behind them. As for music, today's show includes possibly the most defining arcade sounds of late 20th century, some that helped launch their composers to superstar status. And make sure to stick around to discover the Model 2's military connection. You're listening to Square Wave on CKUW 95.9 FM.
Roaring Star!
Welcome back to Square Wave on CKUW 95.9 FM. By now, many of you know that this show is about video game music history. That means I get to tell the story of how it was made and those who made it. I focus mostly on composers. They're the unsung heroes behind the music in video games, and bringing attention to their work is one of the things that I love most about this program. Sometimes I'll put a game or a series front and center, and that allows me more freedom to explore a single soundtrack and its development. The other framework that I've begun to incorporate this season has been to look at specific pieces of gaming hardware and explore their significance within the larger video game landscape and, of course, play the best soundtracks that they offered. Today's program belongs in this category. And fans of the show will also know that, as part of reflecting on bygone eras of video game music, I'm often forced to contend with the shifting demands of the market and technological advances. Overall, I'm pretty down on the abrupt shift to 3D gaming that took place on home consoles in the 1990s, and I believe that something was lost when legions of developers shoehorned their franchises into the third dimension that was afforded to them by the more advanced hardware. And this coincided with the so-called advances in video game music sound. More storage and faster processors meant that home consoles could play CD-quality music at the cost of their identity. Now, a more dramatic person might have said soul there, but it was a Faustian bargain to say the least. The iconic video game sound was discarded in the pursuit of trying to sound like everything else. On the other hand, I have a hard time imagining the counterfactual. Better graphics have always been a way to attract players, and that's true in arcades just as it is at home. And if your audience thinks that 3D is de facto better than 2D, or that digital audio is better than synthesized sounds that came before them, then you've got two options: adapt or die. And don't get me wrong, I live in reality. I know about shareholders and revenue and profits. Selling the latest trend to your audience as inherently superior, I don't fault companies for that. It's just a shame that so much was lost in the rush to do it. Which brings us to the topic of today's program, the Sega Model 2. Or at least that takes us to the Sega Model 1, which was the company's first video game system designed for 3D graphics. And it was originally known as the CG board until it was retroactively renamed the Model 1. And it was Sega's answer to Namco's System 21 arcade. That arcade was designed from the ground up to draw 3D polygons, and it became the most powerful arcade board of the 1980s. And it set Sega on a 3-year quest to develop their own polygon-capable arcade. So when it released in 1991, the Model 1, Sega's Model 1, could handle up to 180,000 polygons per second and playback near CD-quality music and sound effects. Unfortunately, the machine was expensive, and the only game available on it was Virtua Racing, although Virtua Fighter and the less popular Virtua Formula would come to the market a year later. All told, the Model 1 only ever had 6 games made for it, in part because, a year after its release, Sega released the much more powerful Model 2, and one of the most iconic racing games of all time alongside it. I'm of course talking about Daytona USA, a absolutely seminal racing game in the genre, featuring an incredible legendary soundtrack, composed and sung by Takanobu Mitsuyoshi, and there's simply no denying the incredibly catchy tunes here. Once they're in your head, there's no getting them out. Just lean into it and sing along. So, with that in mind, here's Let's Go Away and Sky High from the Daytona USA soundtrack released in 1993, and when I'm back, more on the fledgling Mitsuyoshi's breakout score. You're listening to Square Wave on CKW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg. Welcome back to Square Wave on CKUW 95.9 FM. We just heard two tracks from the timeless Daytona USA soundtrack composed by Takanobu Mitsuyoshi in 1993. And Mitsuyoshi had been a composer at Sega for a few years by the time of Daytona's release for the Model 2 arcade hardware. He'd composed a few solo efforts and worked with industry luminaries the likes of Hiroshi Kawaguchi and Takayuki Nakamura, but Daytona USA was Mitsuyoshi's breakout score. His infectious rock, funk, and jazz fusion tracks filled countless arcade halls in the era, his unmistakable voice drilling itself into the skulls of passersby. Interestingly, on the Daytona USA soundtrack, the instruments and vocals that you hear are not pre-recorded, but are actually sampled into the Yamaha sound chip present inside the machine. The samples were still CD-quality sounds, but the machine wasn't capable of playing full-on audio recordings. And this makes the Model 2 sort of a missing link between the sound chip-produced sounds of earlier machines and the digital audio playback that would come later. The game's attract mode, which prominently featured Daytona USA's lead track, Let's Go Away, which we just heard there, became something of a curse on arcade staff. It ran on a 50-second loop, meaning that if you worked an 8-hour shift within earshot of one of these machines, you would hear Mitsuyoshi sing Daytona 576 times if it wasn't being played. Mercifully, it was being played quite a bit. I had said previously the game debuted in 1993, but it wasn't really released worldwide until April 1994. Despite only having 9 months on the charts that year, Daytona USA became Japan's ninth highest grossing arcade. And in 1995, a year after its release, it topped the same list. In North America, the machine fared even better, reaching the number two spot in 94, winning a Diamond Award from the Amusement Machine Association as well. It won the same award again in 95 as the third highest grossing arcade machine of the year. In 2002, Sega claimed that Daytona USA was one of the most successful arcade games of all time, although this is a somewhat hard claim to prove. In 2015, maybe a little bit more substantive here, IGN called Daytona USA, quote, perhaps the most recognizable arcade racing game of all time and the highest grossing sit-down arcade cabinet ever, unquote. And the writer noted that the machine was still present in arcades and bowling alleys 20 years on after its debut. Partially, this success was due to Daytona USA's emphasis on multiplayer. This was the era of Street Fighter II, after all, and the twin-seat setup meant that players could compete head-to-head on separate screens. No doubt competition was a big part of the game's appeal, but beyond this, Daytona was also a very well-made game. No surprise considering that it came from Sega's powerhouse arcade development arm, Sega AM2. AM2 was headed by Yu Suzuki, the mastermind behind other revolutionary cabinets such as Space Harrier and OutRun. Daytona USA's success catapulted the company AM2 to new heights and made Yu Suzuki a genuine video game celebrity. AM2's success on the Model 2 didn't stop there, however. During the Model 2's lifetime, the AM2 team developed a pair of sleeper hits in Virtua Striker and Fighting Vipers, alongside two more massive hits for the platform. The first of these was Virtua Cop. It was a very successful light gun game that I'm not going to spend too much time talking about, mostly because the soundtrack is pretty weak. Not that it really mattered, considering the game's music was muffled by the constant gunshots and cries from the terrorists and hostages that were on the receiving end. But the other big hit for AM2 during this era was Virtua Fighter 2, which built upon the impressive fighting mechanics at the core of Virtua Fighter for the Model 1. Like Daytona USA, Virtua Fighter 2 was composed by Takanobu Mitsuyoshi, though this soundtrack heads in a distinctly different direction, possibly because Mitsuyoshi once again shares a composer credit with the veteran composer Takayuki Nakamura, as well as a relative unknown, Akiko Hashimoto, who had only composed one soundtrack before Virtua Fighter 2 and hasn't composed video game music since. Let's take a break now to hear some of this trio's Virtua Fighter 2 soundtrack, and when I come back, we'll talk more about the Model 2 hardware and how Sega was able to produce the machine so quickly after the Model 1. You're listening to Square Wave on CKW 95.9 FM.
Yeah. better run home to mama now.
Ready to go home now?
We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Square Wave on CKUW 95.9 FM. We just heard three tracks from Sega's Virtua Fighter 2, released for the Model 2 arcade board in 1994. And at the risk of overstating the obvious, this was a fighting game and a sequel to the first Virtua Fighter, which released for the Model 1 a year prior. Coming out in the wake of Street Fighter 2, Virtua Fighter set the genre on its head by being the first fully 3D fighting game. Personally, I remember being just blown away the first time I ever saw this game in action. I was maybe 7 or 8 years old, I didn't have any quarters, but I just stood there watching the attract mode on repeat. I was stunned by the way the 3D models moved around the arena, striking, kicking, and grabbing one another. It seemed like something out of a movie, and I don't think I'll ever forget it. That said, though, Virtua Fighter 2 takes everything that its predecessor did and improves upon it. VF2 was the first game to use motion capture for its moves, something that is commonplace in the industry today. And the graphics, oh, the graphics. They were such a huge step up over the original game and probably the best example of what an improvement Sega's Model 2 was over its Model 1. You see, the Model 2 was capable of filtered texture mapping, which, to be fair, sounds like a buzzword invented in a boardroom somewhere, but really it's not. The easiest way to understand it is to picture a game without it. The Model 1, for example, could draw like 200,000 polygons, and polygons are those tiny triangles that make up 3D models. And without texture mapping, those polygons were stuck to one color. Think about trying to create a 3D model of a plane wing. It's basically a flat triangle, right? You'd think it wouldn't require much in the way of polygons, and you'd be right. Unless you were trying to put some detail on the wing, like, say, a logo. For that, you'd have to draw the logo using polygons and then paint them a different color. There you go. There's your logo. But doing this increases the load on the processor for not that much gain. With texture mapping, however, you model the wing using only the polygons that it requires, then apply the logo texture over top. Not only does this increase the model's detail, it also frees up the computer to draw other polygons that would be required for the same effect without texture mapping. Besides the ability to draw almost twice the number of polygons that the previous model could produce, the Model 2 introduced this texture mapping feature to arcades, and the AM2 team puts it to excellent use here on Virtua Fighter 2. It sort of makes you wonder, though, if it took Sega 3 years to develop the Model 1, how are they able to produce an entirely new, more powerful arcade board in just 1 year? Well, they had a little help. The story here goes that sometime in the early 90s, GE Aerospace approached Sega to pitch them on a new texture mapping chip that they developed for use in flight simulators. GE Aerospace wanted $2 million to license the chip, and Sega leapt at the offer. Yu Suzuki's AM2 team was able to condense this technology into a more affordable chipset and bring it to their latest arcade model. As for GE Aerospace, that company would become part of Martin Marietta in 1993, which later merged with Lockheed in 1995. Today, they are the war profiteering defense contractor known as the Lockheed Martin Corporation. One interesting note here, before Martin Marietta merged with Lockheed, they actually sponsored a game for Sega's Model 2. 1994 is a desert tank, and it was also developed by Sega's AM2. And please forgive me for this transition, but I'm going to go from one not-so-very-good game about real death machines to a very good game about fictional ones. Yes, released in 1996, Virtual On Cyber Troopers is a two-player versus game that puts players in control of a giant fighting robot, my favorite. The game is anime as all get-out with a soundtrack to match, but those who played this game praised Virtual On Cyber Troopers for its non-traditional approach to the arena battler genre. And the game received near-universal high review scores. Unfortunately, time has not been kind to this particular series. The studio behind the Virtual On Cyber Troopers games, that's Sega AM3, by the way, no longer exists. And today, these games seem to be mostly forgotten about by the publisher. That doesn't stop people like yours truly from looking back at what was and appreciating the incredible soundtrack that Kentaro Koyama produced for the title. That's what I like to play for you now, a portion of the Virtual On Cyber Troopers soundtrack released for the Sega Model 2. And like I said, it's a soundtrack that would be right at home in any action anime. It even features a song that was removed from the game for sounding a bit too much like a popular anime export from the 90s. And despite the fact that it doesn't appear in the game, I've opted to include that track here. Let's just say it's to help you fight evil by moonlight. You're listening to Square Wave on CKW 95.9 FM. Get ready. Welcome back to Square Wave on CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg. Sega's Model 2 is in the spotlight this week. We just heard two tracks from the 1996 title Virtual on Cyber Troopers. They were composed by Kentaro Koyama, the same composer who did the Gunblade NY and Virtual Cop soundtracks, also for the Model 2. Both the aforementioned titles there are light gun shooters. You've probably seen these if you've stepped in an arcade in the last 20 years, but players will step up to the machine, pop in a few quarters, pick up the plastic gun, and basically start shooting stuff. It's an attention-grabbing type of game, and this formula has been revisited time and time again over the decades. When Virtua Cop released in 1994, it was the first game of its kind to use 3D polygons. This was a huge boost to the genre. Virtua Cop heralded a new wave of 3D light gun games, some of which went on to be among the most successful arcades ever. In 1995, Namco released Time Crisis, which added a pedal that let players step in and out of cover, and they followed it up with Police Trainer in 1996. Atari Games released the highly successful FMV light gun shooter Area 51, and these games all owe a debt of gratitude to Sega's Virtual Cop. Even as first-person shooters exploded in popularity on home consoles at the end of the 90s, light gun games offered an experience that couldn't be easily replicated at home. There's just something about holding that plastic gun in your hand and using it to take out enemies before they did the same to you that kept players coming back. Virtual Cop also received a sequel in 1995, but when Sega decided to return to the genre in 1997, they knew that there was something missing, a certain je ne sais quoi. And as good as it is to shoot terrorists and aliens, there is a third, undiscovered pillar of light gun games that had yet to rear its ugly, decomposing head. I'm of course referring to zombies. And between Sega's The House of the Dead in arcades and Capcom's Resident Evil series on home consoles, zombies instantly became a pop culture force to be reckoned with, the effects of which are still being felt today. I'm looking at you, The Walking Dead. Anyway, Sega's The House of the Dead took everything great about Virtual Cop and covered it in blood. With a plot firmly rooted in B-movie camp and gameplay that featured branching paths, House of the Dead went on to become the most successful light gun horror game series ever made. And not just in Japan, but around the world. Audiences loved it. I mean, most audiences did anyway. In 2000, the American city of Indianapolis attempted to ban violent video games and argued that House of the Dead was obscene. When the U.S. Appeals Court Judge Richard Posner was handed the case, he dismissed the ban outright, saying it was unconstitutional. In his review, Posner said, quote, "The House of the Dead depicts zombies being killed flamboyantly, with as much severing of limbs and effusion of blood, but so stylized and patently fictitious is the cartoon-like depiction that nobody would consider it obscene," unquote. So it was that House of the Dead fittingly came back from the dead in Indianapolis. And as for the game's soundtrack, it was composed by Tatsuya Kawauchi, who also composed the sequel. Kawauchi is responsible for another very different Model 2 game, and that is Sega Water Ski. It has a great Caribbean and City Pop-influenced soundtrack. It's definitely worth checking out. But on the first House of the Dead, Kawauchi combines gothic chamber music, dark techno beats, and some inventive sampling to create a soundtrack that provides the perfect ambiance for blasting away at hordes of the undead. I've pulled up two tracks from the game which I think stand as excellent examples of Kawauchi's work. Here they are, Revenge and Theme of the Magician, and when I'm back, we'll wrap up the Sega Model 2, and I get to play one of my very favorite soundtracks ever. You're listening to Square Wave on CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg. Square Wave on CKUW 95.9 FM. We're approaching the end of today's look at Sega's Model 2 arcade hardware, which had a hand in defining arcades during a decade that marked the beginning of the end for the format. By my count, there were 34 games released for the Model 2, 30 of which were made by Sega themselves. Obviously, with so many games, it's not feasible for me to look at all of them in 60 minutes, but I hope that I was able to do the platform justice. Maybe I even brought back some memories for those of you who were lucky enough to experience the platform. After the Sega Model 2, the company would release their Model 3 in 1996, which combined with the Model 2 to sell more than 200,000 arcade cabinets by the turn of the century. In 1998, Sega released the Naomi arcade board, which brought the platform more in line with their Dreamcast architecture, making it easier to program for and cheaper to produce. Of course, by this time, the heyday of arcades had long passed, and these machines began to be less and less of an attraction. Sega is still making arcades today, but many of their brightest creative talents like Yuji Naka and Yu Suzuki have all moved on. The same cannot be said for the company's compositional talents, however. Somehow both Hiroshi Kawaguchi and Takenobu Mitsuyoshi are still working on games at the company. For Kawaguchi, his star rose in the years before the Model 2 on games like Hang On, Outrun, and Afterburner. The Model 2 era squarely belongs to Mitsuyoshi, though, whose Daytona USA soundtrack transcended video game music to become part of the larger pop culture. He was also the composer behind the arcade soundtrack for Sega Rally Championship, a game that features an incredible soundtrack and possibly the most uplifting game over screen ever. Just check this out. See what I mean? It makes you want to lose. That's some impressive stuff right there. Anyway, I'm a huge fan of this soundtrack, so I want to jump right into it. Hopefully I can squeeze two songs in here before I have to go. This is Condition, Reflex, and Ignition, composed by Takenobu Mitsuyoshi for Sega Rally Championship in 1995. You're listening to Square Wave on CKUW 95.9 FM. listening to today's episode of Square Wave. I had to cut that last song a bit short. I hope you don't mind. Please join me again next week for more video game music history. Square Wave is written and hosted by me, Dustin Rogers. The show's theme was composed by Spaceman Fantastiques. Don't forget, if you would like to stay connected to the show, you can